The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, after some huge results at both ends of the table, I think we might be breaking out the P word again at the start of this week's episode.
Yeah, we might have to. Pivotal is definitely the word. Crucial game at the top. Obviously, it's kept the title race alive. And yeah, big wins at the bottom as well. And Vissel Kobe back into last. And with their performance, I mean, it's hard to make an argument for them to not be there come the end of the season.
Yeah, most heavenly. The musical chairs at the bottom of the J1 table continued over the weekend. While, yes, there's nowhere else we can start our review of J1 Match Day 24 than at Todoroki, where the teams who have won the last five top flight titles combined faced off. Of course, four of those championships have been won by the hosts, Kawasaki Frontale. They are the two-time defending champions, but the last team to unseat them on the throne, Yokohama F. Marinos, were their visitors and, the runaway leaders at the top of the pile, Sam. And, befitting the occasion, these two teams played an absolute barn burner with, some fantastic football in between two dramatic finishes to each half.
Absolutely. I thought it was a very good game of football, and it usually is when these two meet. And it's only when these two play each other you do realise that these are quite clearly the two best teams in the league. Both with the differing styles in this one, Yokohama a bit more on the floor, a bit more traditional, really good football or whatnot. Kawasaki went a little longer, a little more direct, but it paid dividends for them. And yeah, it was just a really good open game, a bit feisty at times. And you could tell, I think, that it was a game that Kawasaki absolutely had to win. I think, especially in that first half, they had a little bit of an edge to them. But Yokohama, they're so good on the counter-attack as well. So both teams were always in this game. It was a really exciting one. And, I mean, what a finish we had to that game as well. Absolutely unbelievable. The J-League just always delivers.
Yeah, absolutely stunning. No question about that. So, yes, the wounded champions who came in 11 points behind their visitors, of course, albeit with the two games in hand that we've referenced so many times over the last few weeks. And yes, simply put, it was a must win for their title chances. Any hopes they had of making it three straight titles rested on winning this game. And they took the lead in the 25th minute, Sam, with a lovely header from Leandro Damião. But this was all about the superb cushioned volley into the box from the returning Miki Yamane that did basically all the work. And all Damião had to do is glance his header past Yohei Takaoka.
Yeah, this is really where long ball football can actually look fantastic and be brilliant. And this is a terrific piece of play from Yamane. Long ball to him, a diagonal, and then he cushioned that volley so well. It's just wonderful technique to match to meet it as he did. Damian keeps himself just about onside and gets the header in past Takeoka. A fantastic goal. It just, the ball from Taniguchi, first of all, is very good because it takes out so many players. And Yamane, just, it's so great for Kawasaki to have him back. He was one of the few returnees from the major COVID outbreak that's affected them for the last few weeks. So they had a really more of a balanced side this time. And yeah, he's just got real quality. And he's showing again why maybe he should be first choice for Japan.
Yes, indeed. But there was a sting in the tail just before halftime for Frontale, deep into first half stoppage time indeed. And it was another Yamane cross into the F. Marinos box that was headed out. And 12 seconds later, the ball was in the Frontale net after Elber and Marcos Jr. played a 1-2 in midfield. And then Elber set Teruhito Nakagawa free down the middle, the 2019 Player of the Year, sending a lovely dinked finish over Junsung Ryong and into the net. So, yeah, quite a sucker punch right on the brink of halftime, Sam. So the hosts, obviously, they must have been thinking, OK, we're going to make it into the sheds ahead here with a chance to regroup and push on in the second half. But, those best laid plans were, cut to ribbons by a lightning faster F. Marinos counterattack.
Yeah, it could easily have put Peter Kawasaki the manner of this goal because, yeah, one moment they're attacking, they think they might be there to double their advantage, and then, yeah, immediately Yokohama get up the field. It's so quick, the movement, the passing. They just took the midfield and defence right out of the game with a couple of quick movements and, yeah, released Nakagawa for a lovely finish. And, yeah, it looked a crucial goal at that point because Kawasaki had edged that first half, and if they went in 1-0 up, you'd think, okay, maybe they can see it out a little bit more, but that put Yokohama right back into it, right with the impetus going into the second half, and perfectly set the game up for that second half, and it became a bit more, even a bit more end-to-end second half, and yeah, it just produced a fantastic 45 minutes of football.
Yeah, terrific stuff. And, obviously numerous goal mouth incidents that we could, chat about, almost endlessly, listeners. But, yeah, picking out the major ones, 20 minutes into the second half, the F. Marinos captain, Takuya Kida, shot across Jung, but the ball came back off his left-hand post, much to his relief. And then 3 minutes later, up the other end, there was an unbelievable block on the line from Eduardo to deny Marcinho's drive from inside the six-yard box. So, both sides having, near misses or lucky escapes, depending which way you want to slice it. And then, Sam, we had the unfortunate incident of the referee having to be subbed with what appeared to be a hamstring injury. And I guess, was there any team enjoying the majority of the momentum at that point? And this kind of a break in play, because it was 3 or 4 minutes. Did you feel that disrupted either team more than the other?
No, I think it kind of disrupted both teams equally because it was a period of the game where it was really end-to-end. Both teams were going for it. And it just kind of stopped the flow of the game in its tracks a little bit. I don't know whether that maybe helped Kawasaki a little bit more. Maybe they wanted to keep it a bit tighter, whereas Yokohama are so keen to play on the counter-attack that they really like the end-to-end stuff of it. So maybe it affected Yokohama a little bit more, but I say at the time, both teams were absolutely going for it. So it just kind of halted the game a little bit. It took a little bit more time for the game to get going. And when it did, it was still both teams attacking. It was still both teams creating chances. There was very little, I thought, to separate the two sides.
Well, yeah, and then deep into stoppage time, of course, that was extended because of that injury to the referee and him needing to be replaced by the fourth official. So, even in the 95th minute, when Leo Ciara's shot from a tight angle was saved into the side netting by Jung, there was still plenty of time left in the game for what turned out to be the grandstand finish. But I tell you what, Sam, I just did want to mention that chance for Ciara a little bit more because, well, there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about it. The first is that Anderson Lopez has obviously come in from the cold after his six-game spitting suspension. And I think last week was his first start. And I mentioned last week's episode that Kevin Muscat was able to rest, in inverted commas, so many players for last week's game. But, I mean, it appears that Lopez is clearly Muscat's first choice because, Ciara was again on the bench here and did come on and obviously looked dangerous as he has pretty much all season. But, Lopez was, again, preferred from the start. And the other point I wanted to mention is that we all know how Tatsuki Seko has been, pretty much banished by the Kawasaki manager, Toru Oniki. And I think if Ciara's a shot had have actually gone in, we might have seen Seko banished to Siberia after this because there was a ball was heading out for what would have been a Kawasaki goal kick, and Seko didn't need to head it back into play. He could have just let it sail over his head and Jung would have restarted, but he instead headed the ball back and basically straight to Ryuta Koike, who played in Ciara, I think there was another pass into Ciara, but yeah, I mean, if that goal had gone in, that might have been the last we saw of Tatsuki Seko. But I guess that's not really a question, is it? The Lopez versus Ciara one is more interesting, and for F. Marinos going forward as well, how they're going to look up front.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's really hard to get a firm grasp on who Kevin Muscat thinks is his best team because they obviously had the Levain Cup in midweek and they made a lot of rotation there. And Ciara started in that one. Mizunuma started as well, who had previously been like a first choice at right wing as well. So it's not 100% certain who he does favour. I mean, look, I was concerned a little bit about the defence as well, because he started with Iwata and Eduardo. Iwata's generally played in midfield for most of this season. Eduardo has got better, but still not been the Eduardo of last season. And most maybe would have gone with Sonoda and Hatanaka, but I guess that call paid off for him with the Eduardo block on the line. Then Iwata made a fantastic challenge on Kobayashi when he was going through, so that worked there. And maybe I don't know if this one necessarily worked, because Leo Sierra I thought looked a little bit more dangerous when he came on than Anderson Lopez, although this, yeah, it was a big chance, wasn't it, right at the end. I think he should have gone across the goalkeeper instead of going into the side netting, and I think he had a bit more space than he realized. But yeah, it is an interesting one to see which way they're going to go with this, because both have proven capable of scoring plenty of goals. I don't think he's ever likely to go to a system where that he plays both of them. But so I think, just as the team have been anywhere in general, I think it's just going to be a bit of rotation, and we'll determine there for which player, which, yeah, for whatever game it might be, they might think, oh, maybe Anderson Lopez slightly more suited to this game than another. But yeah, I don't really know exactly who he's going to go with. But yeah, it's a little bit of a mystery every time Kevin Muscat names a team.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it's perfect for him, because it keeps the opposition guessing as well, because they don't really know who to prepare for, because, yeah, we've seen how prolific Ciara's been over the last, not just whilst Lopez was suspended, but, yeah, that obviously he took his chance while his fellow striker was out of the picture, and certainly grabbed a bunch of goals. But, yeah, Lopez has reclaimed his spot for now. But, I mean, I think you said last week or the week before, basically, yeah, they've got basically two 11s at their disposal, haven't they? So, there's bound to be rotation in from game to game and competition to competition, as you say, the Levain Cup. Plenty of changes made in that competition last midweek. All right, so after the Ciara chance in the 95th minute, I said there was still plenty of time left in the game, and what a grandstand finish it was. Obviously, everybody in the F. Marino's end were deflated in the 99th minute, Sam, but I guess all neutrals and everybody hoping for a decent title race. I guess F. Marino's have only dropped 1 point at the death, haven't they? But for the sake of Kawasaki's title chances, as we said, they simply had to have this win. And Jeziel, the big man, we know he's only just back from his devastating knee injury, and what emotion he showed after heading in off the post across from Akihiro Iyanaga in the 99th minute. Obviously not exactly the same as the first goal, Sam, but I guess it had similar elements. The Shogo Taniguchi playing the ball out to the right, where Yu Kobayashi sent Iyanaga down, who cut back onto his left foot. And we know how effective Iyanaga's left foot can be. And he dropped it right on Jeziel's noggin. And the big man did the rest to spark wild scenes on the Todoroki terraces, Sam.
Oh, they were incredible scenes, weren't they? I'm very happy for Jeziel with the amount of time he's had out injured. And yeah, he was just living and breathing this game. I mean, he was the one that got the flick on for Kobayashi that I mentioned earlier. He just decided, I don't know how late, it was quite late in the game, but he decided, I'm going to go up front here, I'm going to sort this out. And that was kind of how it was. And yeah, it was another ball out wide. Maybe they didn't get out to Iyanaga too quickly. And you've got to stop the cross when Damian generally is in the box, or in this case, Jeziel. They didn't manage that, and Jeziel just was never going to be beaten in the air. It's a fantastic header off the post, no chance for Takeoka, and incredible scenes. Yeah, it's keeps the title race alive. I really don't mind who wins out of these two teams. I think they're both incredible teams, but for the neutral, you really want a good long title race, preferably down to the final day. So this was perfect for the league as a whole, but yeah, just fantastic for Kawasaki, but commiserations to Yokohama, because that's probably quite cliche, but I don't think either team really deserved to lose that game.
No, yeah, very well said. And we've spent an extended period of time at the start of the episode talking about this game, but I'm sure you can appreciate it, listeners. It was an absolute humdinger, and such an important game for both teams, and for the sake of the title race, it was Yeah, an absolutely terrific occasion at Todoroki. The home supporters obviously went home very, very happy. And yeah, with their team now within 8 points of the leaders again with those two games in hand. And yes, it's well and truly game on. But F. Muddy knows if we've learned anything about them so far this season is that, yes, they will be back. And yeah, look out to their next opponents, who are unfortunately for Belmare. Yes, it happens to be Shonan at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night. So goodness knows what a wounded F. Madinos might do to Shonan, who have will be fresh off shipping five goals to Sapporo, as we'll come on to later on in the episode. But yeah, what a huge occasion it was at Todoroki, and almost as equally a big game was played up at Kashima on Saturday, Sam. And yes, it was a battle between two top six teams. Antlers, of course, the host, second at kickoff, and they hosted Sanfrecce Hiroshima, sixth in the table. And what's happened at the end of the day here is that Sanfrecce Hiroshima have left it late, but ended up returning home with all 3 points after a 2-0 win. And in the aftermath of that, the Kashima board has decided to relieve manager Rene Weiler of his duties just 24 games into this season. But of course, Sam, Weiler just 20 games technically into his reign, as for the first four match days of this season, when Weiler was unable to take charge of the team, Daiki Iwamasa did so. And Iwamasa will be assuming the position now on a permanent basis after Weiler was pushed after Antlers have gone five games without a win. So I think we're both very surprised by this decision. Antlers dropped three spots in the table down to fifth, but surely this is an overreaction from the Kashima board after a little bit of a blip in form.
It definitely seems that way from the outside. Maybe there's internal things going on. I've heard some rumblings of slight discontent with his methods in training and slight discontent with the way that they've approached games since AS Ueda went. They've gone a little bit too long ball, for my liking at least, and it's not really resulted in with results, actually. It's a couple of games. It's like, what, before this game it was four games without a win, five games now, but it's a slight blip. Generally they've been playing very well. They've been second in the table. They've had to deal with the top scorer in the league leaving. I think that's so difficult for anyone to have to deal with, and I think this is, it looks a little bit like they've panicked a little bit after a couple of losses and just pulled the trigger. But I think it's very harsh, at least from the outside, on Rene Weiler. I think he deserved a bit more time to, I say, turn things around. They've dropped from second for the first time this season, I think. So I mean, it seems very harsh. But yeah, they've gone with, I guess, a safe pair of hands, someone that's going to be liked by everyone there, and but in Daiki Iwamasa. So yeah, interesting. I think it's very harsh, though, on Weiler. I mean, yeah, can you see any justification for this this dismissal then?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got to be behind-the-scenes stuff, hasn't it? It's got to be maybe a couple of key players not happy with the way he's been going about things. I mean, you've mentioned a couple of times in the last few weeks the Diego Pachuca situation. I wonder if that's got something to do with it. I mean, we just have to assume that it has, right? Because yeah, I mean, they're not technically out of the title race. I mean, they're certainly well in with a chance of getting an ACL spot. So I don't think that in general terms Kashima are the sort of team to make a knee-jerk reaction to a block of five games where they haven't won. So, yeah, I think it has to be something behind the scenes, and maybe player-led, or maybe it could just be one or two, as I said, influential players that have made their displeasure known to somebody higher up, and or maybe there is just widespread, or there was, rather, widespread discontent at Weiler's methods. But I mean, I think we'd been fairly we'd been quick to praise him. He hadn't quite done a Michael Skipper, had he, Sam? But I mean, yeah, he had Kashima up at the sharp end of the table. As you said, they've been second for pretty much the entire journey so far. So I guess it's just a shame that an appointment somewhat out of left field for Kashima. Obviously, they've had their share of Brazilian managers over the journey, but the fact that they'd gone European and it hasn't worked out is a little bit of a blot on their copybook, and you just have to wonder, how much of a leash Iwamasa will be given, and if they do look to a foreign manager somewhere down the line, whether this experiment with Vila might put them off, perhaps, going after another European boss. I mean, I'm speaking in generalities here, but you never know, do you?
No, you don't. They've obviously been set in their ways for so long. I hope this doesn't affect the signing of Blessing Aluke from Nigeria. I mean, he's shown the door now if we're going to go in Japanese.
We just got
Korean
used to knowing how to pronounce his name, hadn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it was a bold appointment when they made it, not just because he was a European manager, but because his philosophy was just to come in all out attack and just be really open. But I think I thought generally he'd managed that fairly well, given there's not many defenders in this squad. They've conceded a few more goals recently, but previously it's not like their defense is like as majorly bad as I probably feared, and I thought there might be a few 4-3 games and that sort of thing. I think generally they played well, but obviously losing the Wader, I think it was so crucial, because Suzuki and Everaldo are a little bit too similar, I think, in the way they play. They've not really got that link up. There's not really got that fast moving player like Wader to break the lines and to be fed in by Suzuki. Everaldo is not generally going to do that. He wants the ball a little bit into feet, and it was always going to take a little bit of time to figure out a different way of playing when you've played so long and so effectively playing with Wader. And I just think you've got to give him a little bit more time to sort that out. I mean, it's not like they've completely sunk out of any contention. They're 1 point off at the ACL. So, yeah, really strange. But it does look like they've gone back to their comfort zone, and maybe that will put them off ever going and experimenting again, which would be a real shame, because I thought generally he brought something a little bit different to the league, but obviously that time has gone.
Yes, indeed. So, it was nice to have known you, Rene. Wish you all the best in the future. And, Hiroshima, as we said at the start when we were talking about this game, they left it late. Two substitutes proved to be the difference. Takuma Kawamura came off the bench in the 83rd minute, and less than 30 seconds later, he side-footed home a low cross from Yuki Nogami to make it 1-0 to Sanfrecce. Kawamura was involved in the build-up as well, continued his run, and then, was perfectly placed to tap home Nogami's cross. And then in the 95th minute, so again deep into second half stoppage time, Ezekiel arrowed home across Kwonsante for 2-0. But I don't know, Sam, would we be talking about Rene Vila getting the hook if VAR had have had a closer look at Hayato Araki's challenge on Everaldo in the 68th minute? Of course, the game was still 0-0 at that point. Araki, I guess at first glance, it looks like it's a brilliant sliding tackle, but once you look at it again, Araki basically jumps over the ball, and I don't know, maybe he hits it with his bum, but he basically brings down Everaldo for no apparent reason. And I don't know whether they checked this as thoroughly as they should have, because I guess you could make an argument that Araki got enough of the ball with his derriere, but it didn't look on replay when it slowed down. It is a fairly clumsy challenge.
Yeah, I think VAR, I may have been the VAR referee for this one, because they paid it as much attention as I did, because I saw great challenge from Araki, move on, we don't have to look at that again, and that seems to be what VAR did. But yeah, when you look at the replay, he does just go completely over the ball, misses it, well, kind of sits on it, I suppose, but he hooks Everaldo down, so on closer inspection, it should be a penalty. And they've got away with one, absolutely, but it does just seem that VAR have just thought, yeah, great tackle, we'll move on, that need no further consideration. So absolutely a gripe there for Kashima, and Araki has got lucky, even though I gave him a lot of praise on Twitter and now need to take that back.
No, you're all right, Sam, you're all right. Okay, so, Kashima's stay in the top two where they had been since match day 9, and of course they'd spent some time at the top of the table as well, as has now ended. And who has gone up to second, you might ask? Well, yes, it's once again defying expectations, Kashima Reysol. We said that Hiroshima left it late for their win at Kashima. Well, Reysol left it even later to claim a 2-1 away victory over Kyoto when the substitute Yuki Muto won it in the 98th minute with a shot through Naoto Kami Fukumoto's legs. Of course, there was so much happening earlier on in the game, but yeah, Muto settled it right at the death. Sam, for Sanga, they had a number of players back in their matchday squad after they had recovered from COVID-19, and notably Peter Utaka, of course, who was fit enough to make the bench here and indeed went close to a winner himself in the 90th minute. But yeah, well, Kyoto took a somewhat fortuitous lead, I guess you could call it that, or you could just call it a horrific mix-up by the Kashiwa defense with Yuji Takahashi and his goalkeeper Masato Sasaki getting their wires crossed, and Shohei Takeda volleying in from 25 yards after that dreadful misunderstanding.
Yeah, it was part of a wild opening to this game, but Fukuoka has to take credit for the quick free kick, and it just caused panic at the back for Kashiwa. Sasaki has no right to be running out to try and meet this. It needs to be just be dealt with by Takahashi. Takahashi, I think, thought that the same, but got his head to it, and because Sasaki is completely out, it's an open goal for Takeda, who does take his volley really well, actually. He has to control that. It's not as easy as a tap into the empty net would seem, but yeah, it was a good finish, but yeah, just I think the quick free kick just kind of blew the minds of Kashiwa, and they were just all over the place. But yeah, it was just a manic opening to this game, and this was just, if you were just to describe the first half of this game in one clip, it would be this goal, because it was just absolutely all over the place.
Yeah, stunning stuff. And then, I guess Kyoto tried to top Reysol in the 25th minute when we had a bizarre own goal from 30 yards by Yuki Honda. Honda lobbing Kami Fukumoto, who most impressively imitated a salmon trying to climb a waterfall as he tried to head Honda's clipped ball, I guess, anywhere away from the goal. But Sammy probably should have remembered that he had gloves on.
Yeah, I should have tried to be a goalkeeper rather than a salmon and save this one. Yeah, I understand that you're not supposed to handball it, but we've seen in Japan twice already this season that if there's a pass back, you can save it. You'll get a yellow card. There'll be you might get a red card falsely and have the game replayed. But you'll get a yellow card. It'll be an indirect free kick. Nobody ever scores from indirect free kicks. So that's what you have to do. Don't try and head it away. It's just, yeah, it's a make for a wonderful own goal from Honda. But yeah, just put your hands up, Kami Fukumoto, and deal with the indirect free kick.
Yeah, terrific finish from Honda. Just unfortunately for him, into his own net. And then, 6 minutes into the second half, Sasaki somewhat redeemed himself for that incident in the seventh minute when Sanga went in front by saving well from Kosuke Taketomi. We mentioned Utaka's shot late on in the 90th minute. He fired into the side netting, and then Yuki Muto did the rest and indeed sent the travelling Reysol support home delirious after his goal. He's made quite an impact, hasn't he, Sam, in the past couple of months, and that's been good to see. He's bounced around a couple of different clubs, of course, over the course of his career, and I guess his veteran status is secure now, but he's made himself into an important part of the Reysol squad. And I don't know. I think over the journey we've tried to give Reysol their due, haven't we? All the while we've been just disbelieving the fact that they've stayed as high in the table as they have. But now that they are second, I believe for the first time all season, or at least after the early exchanges of the first few rounds, when often you have some randoms up in the top end of the table. I mean, the fact that they're second after 24 rounds is it's frankly. I've run out of words. It's remarkable. And this just another indication of a team that is, just doesn't give up in games, and they make the most of their opportunities. They're certainly not a star-studded lineup, but the way they've done it, nobody can argue that they don't deserve to be where they are in the table this far into the season.
No, they've been absolutely fantastic. And the point you raised about Muto, it just kind of shows what Nelsinho has been able to do with not a lot, really. But he's getting players like Muto, who's not really done a lot for a few years now. He's playing really well. Hosoya as well, they've stepped into the breach with Douglas out. This game, there was no Mateo Savio, Ominami in Japan international somehow, Takuma Ominami, he was missing. Koga was missing, but they still had that fight. And for them to be second, it's no longer random. It's no longer a little bit of a fluke. And I'm starting to regret fighting against you at the team of the half season when we're discussing manager of the season, because, yeah, the job Nelsinho has done is absolutely incredible. And if we were just to discuss that my manager of the season, as it if it was dished out now, I don't think I could look past Nelsinho. Just, yeah, there's nothing there. So many people would have predicted Kashua in the bottom three. There'd be very few who, I don't think anyone would have predicted them in the top half, let alone second and really challenging for an ACL place. So, yeah, all credit to Nelsinho and all credit to his players. They've just done an incredible job.
Yes, indeed. Well, yeah, it's frankly phenomenal. And yes, their fourth straight win now, as yeah, as we said, got them up to second. They are now F. Marinos' closest challengers, 6 points behind. And well, yeah, it's been a stunning season to this point. And let's hope they have the staying power to last it out for the final 10 match days as we basically enter the stretch run. If we haven't already, I think we've been debating about when it actually does start. But yeah, the way that Raysol are going, the four straight wins, and as we said, second very much on merit. And so another team rising above Kashima, who, as we said, slid down to a fifth spot in the table, were Cerezo Osaka, who swept aside the rabble dressed up in Vissel Kobe kits on Saturday night at the Yodoko Sakura Stadium. It finished 3-0 to the hosts. And, well, a lot of this was self-inflicted on Kobe themselves, Sam. The we mentioned the crazy misunderstanding for the first goal in the Kyoto Kashua game. Not quite the same, but along similar lines. Cerezo pressure paid off in the 22nd minute, and the keeper Hiroki Ikura basically passed the ball straight to one of the secret weapons of your fantasy team, Hiroaki Okuno, who got the first of his two assists after replacing the injured Riki Harakawa early on. Adam Taggart, the Australian striker, was able to stroke home from just outside the box in the 22nd minute. And yes, the Cerezo were on their way.
They were, and this was just atrocious from Vissel Kobe. Absolutely horrendous. Even before the first error, they passed it out. Sakai then passes it back to Kobayashi, who's just not paying attention, first of all. So the ball rolls past him, and they have to restart. Then they try it again. Goes out to Sakai. He's hounded by two players, but no midfielder shows for him. All he can do is go back to Ikura. Ikura takes a poor touch, but then again, nobody is helping him out. I'm not taking all the blame off Ikura, because he just passes it straight to Cerezo players instead of clearing it. But nobody in that midfield was ever bothered to try and help out the defence. And when you're playing it out from the back, you have to have an option. And Kobayashi hung out to the right side and just didn't ever show. Iniesta is too far forward. Yamaguchi is paying no attention. He doesn't want to come back. So there's not really many places for Vissel to go. And in the end, if they'd really, or they're going to pass out no matter what, then they're eventually going to play it out to the opposition. It was the worst possible pass Ikura could have played, straight to Okuno. Then it's one touch into Taggart and then goal, and it makes everyone look ridiculously stupid. But I think, as poor as it is from Ikura, he has to be helped out. And the likes of Yamaguchi and Kobayashi, they're experienced players. They have to know that they have to come back and help, but they're just not doing their job. And more on that for the second goal, because I think that's even worse.
Well, yeah, just past the half hour, Takuma Suzuki, one of the, well, I don't have many secret weapons in my J-League fantasy team, but I guess he is one of them. After his first J-League goal in the, as I said, the 31st minute, he drilled low across the box after basically everyone expected him to cross. After he'd initially taken a corner, the ball was cleared out of the box and played back out to him on the left. Yeah, he cut back onto his right foot, and as I say, everybody expecting a cross, he just drilled the ball low. I guess maybe hoping for a touch from a from a teammate. Sam, you're certainly not going to call that a shot, are you? Knowing your past, this is one of our cross versus shot debates. Heating up here, but for Suzuki anyway, he didn't care. Nobody got a touch on it, and Ikura watched it go in at his far stick. So, what do you reckon? That's a shot.
I think he's just followed it across the area, and if it goes in, it goes in. If it gets a touch, great. It doesn't matter. But the main problem is here is corner cleared out. It works out back to Suzuki. You said it's a secret weapon for your fancy team. I don't think Vissel knew he was there because nobody goes anywhere near him. There's Osako, Yamaguchi and Iniesta, all the three of them that are there facing Suzuki. He's got about 15 yards of space in front of him and none of them react. They just allow him all the time in the world so he can do whatever he likes and sees that there's a gap that he can just fire the ball in and no one's covering the near post. I think Ikura should do a lot better as well with it, but nobody is reacting and it's just so easy. Just horrendous, horrendous defending from Vissel Kobe and poor Brazilian, what is his name, Tula, who's come into this. I mean, he must be looking around him and thinking, what in the world have I signed up for here? Because nobody knows what they're doing. And this was just another complete shambles.
Yep. And the route was completed 3 minutes from time when I want to keep calling him a young striker, but Mutsuki Kato, who the DAZN commentator told me after he'd scored, it was his 25th birthday when he fired home a bullet header from a ball into the box from Riku Matsuda. Well, I want to call it a free kick routine, but it wasn't really, Sam. The ball was just touched to Matsuda, right? So, I mean, there wasn't anything elaborate about it. Kato was just afforded a free header and promptly scored from 6 yards. So I think I've been tempted to call him one of my favorite younger players, but I mean, at 25, I guess in J-League terms, that often is, and maybe 3 years out of the university system, but, you know, elsewhere, that's not necessarily the case at all. But, still an important part of this Cerezo squad. While he's not necessarily first choice these days, but, Kobe, the defense was nowhere, and Kato was the grateful recipient.
Yeah, I suppose Kato, he only started at Kanazawa in 2020, so definitely in J-League terms, he is young. He's one of those that hung on in university for a long while. But yeah, he's had a fantastic... Well, last year I thought was a very good year for him. Not done as much this year, but I mean, if you're playing against Vissel Kobe every week, you're going to score because they put Gokke on him, who decided, I'm not interested in marking him, and just allowed... they were done by that really elaborate set-piece routine, which has confused Kobe. And yeah, it's a free header, so... I don't think Cerezo had to be that good to beat Kobe in this game. I thought it was fairly routine. They played without so many players that we've mentioned a lot of them before, but Jonic wasn't there in this game. Yamanaka wasn't there either. They decided to rotate a little bit. My man Okuno was rested to start with. He didn't get that much of a rest, but he was. And Maikuma likewise. So they decided fairly second string against Vissel Kobe. And they proved the correct decision. It was... Yeah, really comfortable because Kobe were just useless. They just didn't look like they were up for any sort of fight. They didn't look like they were that interested in it. And yeah, they're bottom of the table now. They've still got lots of games to play. They're still in the Levain Cup, even though they were beaten last week by Avispa, who had about, I don't know, no players. They played Yamanoi in centre midfield to end the game. Their goalkeeper, I mean... They played four strikers. It was just a complete mismatch and it still dominated against Vissel Kobe. So, it's terrible times for them. And, after watching this game, it doesn't look like there's a great deal of hope for them. I know they've got a lot of players, but if you're going to defend like that, I mean, you're not going to win any games of football.
No, they are an absolute mess. Of course, you know, just when they look like they're starting to turn a corner, where they'd won two straight games and indeed drawn the next, went three unbeaten. Two straight losses has sent them back down to the foot of the table. And, we're coming on to the rest of the relegation dogfight. So just before we move off this game, Cerezo up to their highest position of the season. They'd worked their way back into the top six after match day 19. And now, yes, third is their highest position of the season. There are 7 points behind the leaders with 10 games to go. So, within touching distance. And if Marino slip up, Reysol and Cerezo are well-placed to put more pressure on them. Although, of course, Frontale with those games in hand, if they can win those, they would skip back up above both of those teams and back up to second. So, let's flip flip our attention now from the top to the foot of the table. We mentioned the musical chairs that's been going on in recent weeks. And Sam, thanks. You mentioned, and I should have done off the top, you mentioned Avispa Fukuoka and the Levain Cup in midweek. Of course, yes, their COVID problems were accelerating throughout the week, and that led to the postponement of their home game against Agumba Osaka on Saturday. That was shaping up as a huge game for both teams. Fukuoka trying to secure their safety in the top flight, and Gumba, after five straight games without a win, looking for any sort of points to improve their situation. So. The musical chairs, as we said, it's in recent weeks, the Shimizu, Iwata and Kobe have seemingly alternated their time at the foot of the table. That is, of course, after previous incumbents Shonan had worked their way out of the drop zone. But S-Pulse were the latest to secure a morale-boosting victory over the weekend, Sam, when they travelled to FC Tokyo and did the business in an action-packed game at Ajinomoto Stadium. A first half that was, notable for a disallowed goal for Tokyo, and then a... I think I've used the expression common assault in terms of tackles or challenges a couple of times this season, haven't I, Sam? And I don't know a better term than that to describe Keiko Higashi's, attack. And Pickles, obviously, you've seen that and chiming in as well. attack on Carlinhos in first half stoppage time. One of those that you just... it's simply unfathomable. There was another one later on in the game. I can't believe that Tokyo finished this game with 11 men after what Leandro did to Yusuke Goto. But in first half stoppage time, that's that high boot on Higashi, I think anywhere else in the world is a red card, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he goes studs up. It catches Carlinhos right in the thigh. I mean, it's just so high. It's so out of control, reckless, whatever word you want to use about it. Like, that is a stonewall red card. I cannot believe that wasn't given. And words just escape me, really, on how that's not been given and how VAR hasn't... How's it not been given straight away? Because it seems quite obvious. And then how VAR hasn't then looked at it and thought, yeah, there's probably a little bit dangerous, that one, and given a red card. So, yeah, that was... ridiculous, as was Leandro slapping Goto as he fell down in the second half. I'll do the other side so you don't have to moan about it, but I thought it was slightly harsh that the goal was ruled out for FC Tokyo. Adalton volleyed it in past Gonda. Higashi is quite close to it, but he's not in line with Gonda at all. I think the ball, whether Higashi's there or not, the ball is going to go in. So I thought that was a little bit harsh, but yeah, I guess things slightly worked out and evened themselves out, because Higashi was a very lucky man to survive that disgusting challenge.
Yeah, just remacable. And I don't want to stir any teapots here, but I just can't imagine that the same decision would have been reached if Carlinhos had done that to Higashi. I don't think... they would have been shaking hands, and the opposing goalkeeper coming over to give him a pat on the back and say, all right, well, let's just keep on with the game. But that was a couple of decisions, as you say. One went against Tokyo and the other went for them. And then S-Pulse, who well and truly played their part in this game. They went ahead 13 minutes into the second half when Carlinhos, who was, I don't know, lucky that his entire body was still intact after that attack by Higashi just before halftime. He rose over Yuto Nagatomo to head in a Teruki Hara cross. It wasn't great from Tokyo defensively. Kuru Matsuki pretty meek down the right-hand side against Hara. And his cross was powered home by Carlinhos, who, I don't know, what was Jakob Slovic doing there, Sam? At first glance, it looks like Carlinhos' header just flashes past a helpless Slovic. But, when you look at a replay from the right angle, Slovic just slaps out a hand at it and, completely misses the ball. So that's maybe one that he could have done better on.
Yeah, I think so. I'm obviously not a goalkeeper. I'm not 100% sure what he was planning. Maybe it was slightly too close for him to react. It was a little bit awkward, but that's maybe being really, really kind to him. I think he should have done better with that one. It was, yeah, quite close to him. He should have saved it, I think. But it was a really good header from Carlinhos, and he was playing very well in this game because they've got so many attacking players, and he is kind of one on the edge. You think Santana is always going to play. They've brought in Inoue and Pikachu, so there's probably one spot there. Carlinhos stamped his authority on that position in this game. I thought he was very much up for it, and it's a really good header to cap his performance.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, before we chat about the last 15 minutes or so, my son's already in bed. But when I play this back to him, he's really curious to know what you think about Pikachu and how he's gotten on so far. I think he's come in from the start in the last couple of games, right? So he was thrown straight in to the starting 11 by Zé Ricardo. And yeah, a couple of chances here. I think he had the first real notable chance of the game in the 20th minute or so here at Ajinomoto. So yeah, it looks like he's settled in reasonably well to the S-Pol system.
Yeah, him and Inoue have both settled in, I thought, pretty well. He's got good energy down that right side. Considering he's 30, he's still, yeah, really up and down. I think he's managed to get a decent understanding as well with Hara. And as you say, he had the first chance, real chance of this game. Just a decent effort, flashed just wide. But yeah, I've liked what I've seen from him so far. It looks like they're really developing a very good attacking quartet there. Less said about the defence, the better. But I suppose Tokyo didn't threaten it too much in this game, as was the case against Tosu last week. I mean, it looked like they'd concede every time they and the opposition went forward. But yeah, it looks really good. I've liked what I've seen. And obviously, he's not had a great deal of time with this side. He's going to just get a few more minutes under his belt. And I think we'll see a lot more from him because, yeah, he was very, very good in Brazil. I remember back when I first started at Football Radar, watched, obviously, Pikachu's a name that you see on the screen. You think, oh, I've got to take notice of him. But I think it was like a Brazilian Cup game I was watching, and he was absolutely fantastic. So if he can bring a bit of that to Shimizu S-Pulse, then they've got a fantastic player on their hands.
Yeah, most definitely. The early signs have been positive from Pikachu. And yeah, that's good to see. And yeah, S-Pulse obviously very happy to head back from the capital with all 3 points here. As we said, Tokyo very, very fortunate to finish this game with 11 men after Higashi's attack on Carlinhos just before halftime. Leandro, well, this is simply unfathomable, the fact that he wasn't sent off in the 75th minute. Poor old Yusuke Goto, he'd only been on the pitch for about 30 seconds when he tried to challenge Leandro from behind. Leandro, took offence to that, as only he knows how, basically swung around and slapped or almost punched Goto in the face as he swung around. Had the audacity to go to go down holding his back, Leandro, which was terrific. I don't know, he might have thrown his back out swinging his punch, but anyway, somehow I think he's tricked the VAR into not sending him off. I mean, we know he's a previous, Sam, and all Tokyo supporters just must have recoiled in horror when he's swung around, because they know what's going to happen next. This is just remarkable. And I mean, it would have been an injustice on Shimizu, because he after that, while he was on the pitch, Leandro, as he usually does, he looked, if not the most likely, then one of the most likely avenues to goal for Tokyo. If he had been involved in getting Tokyo back on level terms, then, I mean, they could have had an argument to protest the result of this game, I think.
Oh, yeah, and it's always the way, isn't it, with Leandro? When he's focused, when he's fit and firing, he looks an incredible player, but he has these tendencies to just, throw hands for whatever reason. And, it's very strange. I wonder if Neil Debnam's made a tweet about it and they can have a good argument about it going forward. But, yeah, it was very unnecessary, completely uncalled for. Maybe he did put his back out swinging it, but yeah, just I don't know what it was, but Tokyo just didn't seem focused for whatever reason, and that kind of cost them. And as I said to you earlier, I didn't mention it last week, but I was coughing in my mind thinking, well, could Tokyo have a run for the ACL? But even thinking about it has jinxed it for you, so I do apologize.
No, you put paid to that, but probably for the best, I think. Yeah, I mean, you didn't want to get my hopes up. And, yeah, well, this is a well and truly, I think, put Tokyo back in their place. I mean, yeah, as we said, that was with 15 minutes to go, that Leandro incident. It was still obviously 1-0 to Espoirs at that point, and Tokyo had a golden opportunity to equalise with 10 minutes left when Kazuya Konno crossed to the back stick. But I think Kashif Bangunagande got a nosebleed being that high up the pitch and mishit his volley with only Gonda to beat. And then 5 minutes after that, so in the 85th minute, the big man Thiago Santana headed in from a Rayon Yamahara cross. Yamahara, of course, one of Sam's favourite players in the J-League, and he's had an absolutely terrific season, Yamahara. This came after good pressing from Espoirs as Tokyo looked to counter from an Espoirs corner, but Espoirs won the ball back on the edge of the box, and Yamahara and Santana did the rest. And as we said, the upshot of this game is Espoirs leaving the capital with a 2-0 victory, and that has seen them climb all the way off the bottom of the table and indeed move out of the relegation places and up to 15th. So three points above Kobe. So it was a big goal difference swing between those two teams this week, obviously with Espoirs winning 2-0 and Kobe losing by three clear goals. And now in between those two teams are Gunma Osaka, who didn't play, of course, this weekend and now have a game in hand, and Jubilo Iwata. So the Espoirs faithful obviously wrapped to move off the foot of the table and obviously to climb above Iwata as makes that doubly fun for the orange half of Shizuoka Prefecture. Iwata travelled to Tosu on Sunday and were on the end of a 2-0 defeat. Taisei Miyashiro scored 2 minutes before halftime to give Tosu their lead. And then Yuki Kakita, along a similar lines to Kawamura in the Kashima-Hiroshima game. Kawamura, 30 seconds after coming on, put Hiroshima into the lead. Well, Yuki Kakita actually one-upped Kawamura. He came on and 26 seconds later, in the 84th minute, made it 2-0 to Tosu with a lovely finish from a Fuchi Honda cross. So one of Scott McIntyre's favourites there, scoring on the end of a lovely cross from one of my favourites, Fuchi. And yes, great to see his rookie cards still accumulating in value after a result of Honda's tremendous play on the pitch. So, this was a steadying victory for Tosu. Sam, it's their first in quite a while. And for Iwata, it puts them back well and truly in the mire and indeed in the second automatic relegation spot.
Yeah, it was a generally very controlled performance, I thought, from Tosu. They were always in control, but when you play Iwata, if it's tight, they've always got a chance in them. They keep themselves in games, and Park had to make a really good save from Ryo Jiman in the first half, and yeah, they had other decent chances. There was one where Matsubara headed it down, and I think it was Kurakawa, I think it was, had a chance very close to goal, but he didn't really get much contact on it, and it was cleared away. And I think Matsubara also hit the post as well before Kakita scored. So there were always moments where Iwata just thought they could have got back into it, but Tosu were always the better side. They had the better chances. Iwasaki probably should have scored early on in the game when he went round Kajikawa, but just overran it a little bit. But yeah, once they brought on Yuki Kakita, 26 seconds, as you said, I think it was 26 seconds after he scored that Scott McIntyre mentioned his goals per minute ratio to me, so he was delighted about it. So maybe they should start him a little bit more, because he obviously does score pretty much every time he plays. But it was a decent performance from Tosun. Iwata, I thought they played okay. They were always in that game, but couldn't string. We spoke last week. They'd got that win over Shonan, and they needed to try and string results together, and they haven't been able to do that, unfortunately for them. So yeah, it still looks like to me, I still think Jubilo are the favourites to go down, but it is so tight there, and they've shown they can win games, they can get points. So yeah, not all over for them, but it's a difficult one to take, because there were chances there for them.
Indeed, and I don't want to speak ill of the absent, Sam, but we talked about the musical chairs at the foot of the table in various parts of this episode. Is there any possibility? Well, of course, it's J1, so there's I'm sure you'll tell me there's a very probably a strong likelihood of Gunma actually finding themselves bottom at the end of match day 25 that comes up this week, because Kobe have to travel up to Sapporo on Saturday afternoon. And we know that Sapporo, well, we're going to come on to the fact that Sapporo have just smashed Shonan, but on a week-to-week basis, obviously, you don't know what you're going to get from them defensively. And in the game we're going to talk about next, Urawa have just lost 3-0 away at Nagoya, and they travel to Stadium Mikopa in the countryside of Shizuoka to face Iwata also on Saturday. So if Kobe and Iwata somehow win their two games on Saturday, Gumba might find themselves bottom as they kick off at home against Shimizu on Sunday. So that's a huge six-pointer at the foot of the table between the teams that currently next to each other in the table, Gumba 16th and Shimizu 15th. So, of course, at the end of the match day, I mean, Espols could be bottom as well, for all we know. But, I guess the musical chairs at the foot of the table, they just show so no signs of abating.
Not absolutely. I think the only thing probably I could guarantee is probably not going to be the same as it is now. It's all going to be all over the place. I can't, like, Kobe versus Sapporo could be absolutely anything. I'm not going to even try and call that game. It might be the worst defending ever seen in a J-League game. I think that might be the one thing I might put on that. But yeah, other than that, who knows? And I'm disappointed you told me it was in Coppa, because I hate that stadium. I think it's just an empty, sparse, far too far away from the pitch. I think Jubilo are much better served playing the Yamaha with everyone really close to the ground, and much better atmosphere. But yeah, I mean, Reds, obviously, we'll come on to their game. They were pretty poor in this one, and they've had a really good run of results, but we've always said that we were not quite convinced about their performances. So there, it is a chance for Iwata at home. You never know. So, and Gamba, I mean, well, Shimizu, I suppose, are also a team you don't really know what you're going to get. If you attack Shimizu, I think there are openings, but the way Gamba have defended this season and with the attack that Shimizu have, you can see them conceding as well. All I can tell you about this relegation zone is that I don't have a clue what's going on, so it could be absolutely anything.
Yeah, I mean, anybody, any patrons who might want to be sending in some questions asking us for our predictions for what's going to happen in the relegation zone with, say, for example, now 10 games to go. I mean, goodness knows. And it, obviously, as we said, it does change on a week-to-week basis. This is the craziest league in the world, although people who follow J2 obviously have an argument about that, I'm sure. All right, so, well, we've got two games to go. I mean, we've already teased half of the games from from the weekend's match day 25, but we better wrap up this past weekend's games, and we've obviously mentioned them in passing already. And Nagoya claimed a much-needed victory at 3-0 at home over Urawa on Saturday in, one of the more eye-opening results of the match day. Grampus moved above Fukuoka in the table with their win and up to 10th. The result was sealed after goals from Takuya Shigehiro just before the half hour. Mateus, of course, Grampus's main man, deep into first half stoppage time. And then Sam's secret weapons in J-League Fantasy. And I was stunned to see this player in your team, Sam, but he's had a huge impact in getting you up to second in the table in this match day. Kensuke Nagai, the former FC Tokyo player, of course, the prodigal son, has returned to Nagoya, and he wrapped up the scoring here just past the hour. So, I guess I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this game, Sam. Was this a bolt out of the blue from Grampus, or perhaps a positive sign going forward? And also on the flip side, was this just a number of chickens coming home to roost for Urawa after their, as we've said, their results had been good in recent times, but their performances hadn't always been as convincing?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I think the main thing was, this is obviously part of the epic trilogy of Nagoya versus Urawa games. This is game two. So they've had to rotate a little bit. Plus, in midweek, Alexander Schultz got injured, so he was out of this game. And then they rotated their midfield as well. And Iwao and Ito didn't start this game. So I think that really weakened the spine of the team, and it gave Nagoya a decent platform into the game. I know Ito came on fairly early because Shibato just was not up to the job and was hauled off before halftime. But I thought Nagoya really made use of that space. They brought in Shigehiro, who's not necessarily the greatest signing on paper anyway, but he worked really hard. And that's the only thing you get with, well, not the only thing, but generally is the only thing you get with there. And the guy is hard work, but I feel he ran the place, just really made Chine and the Iwanami pretty uncomfortable. And yeah, it's just been a talisman for my fantasy football team. I've always spoke very highly of him and was always going to pick him. But yeah, it's worked out nicely. And second in the table, I'll just gloat on that for a little bit and that might be the end of it. But yeah, it's going nicely. But yeah, anyway, back to Nagoya, who was slightly more important than my team. But yeah, I thought they played really nicely. They helped out a little bit by Reds. I thought defensively, and I know I went on a lot about Kobe's defending, but this first goal, it's a throw-in on the right side, and Reds just stand still for the rest of it. It's thrown into Mateus. Nobody goes near him. He passes it to Nagai. Nobody goes near him. He passes it to Shigehiro. He taps it in. It's the easiest goal anyone will ever score. I think they cut to Hasegawa, and he couldn't believe that they just scored that goal. There was a look of surprise on his face, and yeah, it was just dreadful for Reds, and it really set up Nagoya, who I thought were in full control of that first half, and they got their rewards right on the stroke of half-time. It's just useless defending from Chinen as he swipes it away, goes straight to Nagai. He sprints away, good composure to square it to Mateus, and he's never going to miss. So it was a perfect first half for Nagoya. They thoroughly deserved it. And then second half, Reds were always up against it. I thought they played a little bit better, but once that third goal goes in, a little bit fortunate. But yeah, good tapping from Nagoya, great points haul. And yeah, it was a really good victory for Nagoya and a wake-up call for Reds, because once you take out one or two players from this team, it leaves a real big gap, especially in midfield.
Yeah, as I said, one of the big eye-opening results. And yeah, Ricardo Rodriguez has got to get back to work and yeah, trying to sharpen up his players for the last 10 games of the season. Because yeah, I think a push for the ACL places is not beyond Reds, but this obviously sets them back a little. And as we said, Grampus moved above Fukuoka in the table, and they now are directly below Urawa in the table, 3 points behind. But yeah, enough goal difference to not really make that much of an issue at this stage. But yeah, Reds at 9 points now behind a third place to Cerezo. It's doable for them if they're good enough. And well, that's a $64 million question that we'll find out over the rest of the season. And yeah, the final game of the match day then took place at the Lemon Gas Stadium in Hiratsuka on Sunday. And well, chickens coming home to roost, perhaps, Sam. Yeah, Shonan, after their buzz of a long unbeaten run, yes, they're now suffering again on the back of two straight defeats, and they were absolutely pumped by Sapporo, who, yeah, they've just they had one of those games where they have, I guess, once every couple of months where everything goes right for them and everything works, and they can look like world beaters. They made a fast start through Yoshiaki Komai in the ninth minute. Shinzo Kuroki made it to 2-0 after some pinball wizard and general malaise in the Shonan defense in the 14th minute, and it was 3-0 before halftime through Hiroki Miyazawa. And then midway through the second half, Shunta Tanaka and Ryota Aoki scored goals in quick succession to make it 5-0 before the scantest of consolations for Belmare, with 11 minutes to go from Hiroyuki Abe wrapped up the scoring. So 5-1, sorry, it finished to Consadole. And I guess, well, this is a result that ultimately, this was a six-pointer as well, I guess, wasn't it, Sam? Because they were level on points at kickoff, and Sapporo also moved above Fukuoka in the table and up to 11th. They're certainly not out of danger themselves, but yeah, a much-needed victory. And as I said, one of those days for them when everything they hit went in.
Yeah, very much so. It was absolutely one of those. Everything went for Sapporo. Nothing really went for Shonan. A few breaks didn't go their way. A few, yeah, they lost their... They were 2-0 down at the time, but they then lost Machino to injury, and that really went their threat. Ohashi is quite workmanlike. He tries hard, but he's not really likely to score goals. And they didn't really create anything either, to be fair. But I thought Sapporo played really well. They got their goal early. It was just high pressing. And then Ogashiwa, who was barely played this season through injury, I thought he was absolutely crucial to the way they played in this game, because it was finally a player that was going to get up high to... with Kuroki and really link with him. And yeah, Ogashiwa was really at it. It was a wonderful cutback for the first goal. Komai hits it into the top corner. And yeah, he was involved with everything, Ogashiwa. The second goal is very fortunate in that it's a long ball and he just kind of bounces around all over the place as Shonan can't clear. Eventually comes to Ogashiwa, fires it across. It causes more panic in the box. Oiwa can't quite clear and Kuroki scores. But yeah, generally really good play from Ogashiwa. It got them that, they got their 3-0 lead just before half time. It really opened it up. And once Sapporo have that cushion, they can then, they're still going to throw players forward, and it allowed them to be really open. It allowed them to be expressive. They took their goals really well. It was great to see Thai international Superchok come on. He looked very lively in one of those shadows, in those shadow positions behind the striker. He set up Aoki for a first assist on his debut. Looked really good. So yeah, everything went really well for Sapporo. I don't know if they can do this more often or consistently. They've not shown that at all this season, but this was a really good morale boost. And Jay Bothroyd was delighted on Twitter, which is, I think, the first time this season as he's been commenting on them. So yeah, all good for Sapporo, but really worrying for Shonan. If Machino is out for any length of time, then you do have to fear for them, because, well, they've only scored 19 goals 24 games this season with him. And yeah, without him, I think that might have been halved, maybe a bit less. But yeah, so not great for Shonan, but they've got to regroup. They've got the easiest game on paper that you can get away at Yokohama F. Marinos at the weekend, but it's the Kanagawa derby. Yeah, fall out the window, all that sort of thing. So, and it's always lively between those two teams. There's always goals, and Shonan managed to get shock results in the past, so who's to say they can't do that again?
Well, that's right. Yeah, get down the bookies and get your money on a 4-0 Shonan win, away win, right? I mean, that's what they did to that's what they did to Kawasaki just before the last international break. So yeah, I'm sure that'll yeah. Well, of course we're speaking in jest, listeners, but well, yeah. I mean, it's a 2-horse race, and you never can tell. But yeah, I doubt they'll be causing the biggest boil over in J1 history twice in the same season. But you never know, Bel Murray. Although yeah, on the evidence of Sunday, yes, it looks a very, very tall order. But yeah, great for you to mention Superchok Sarachat. Sam, yeah, he's yeah, as you said, got an assist on his debut, and yeah, I'm sure the J-League international social media teams will be working overtime to work him into their content over the yeah, the days and weeks to come. So yeah, Sapporo, a terrific away win for them, and well, as we said earlier, we teased it earlier, they'll be kicking off the match day 25 slate at home against Kobe on Saturday afternoon, this time in the comfort of the Sapporo Dome rather than the outside at Sabetsu. So it will be much more comfortable for the players. But of course, listeners, before we get on to the weekend's schedule, we have teased some of the games already, of course. So let's just, Sam, bring the listeners up to date with what happened in the first legs of the Levain Cup quarterfinals on Wednesday night, the 3rd of August. I guess the team that has the biggest advantage from the first leg is Hiroshima, who won 3-1 at home against Yokohama F. Marinos. But well, they've recently, of course, travelled to the Nissan Stadium, Sanfrecce, and were on the end of a 3-0 defeat. So they won't be counting any chickens ahead of the return leg on this coming Wednesday night. Do we know whether Fukuoka will be able to field a team for the return leg at the Best Denki Stadium against Kobe, Sam? As you said earlier, they were 2-1 up after the first leg.
Yeah, there's no official confirmation. As it stands, the game is going ahead. And I think most of the players that they missed, especially last weekend against Cerezo, those players should be back, and they should get enough of the players that missed last midweek back. I think it's going to be quite tight. Who knows what sort of team they're going to be able to put out. But yeah, it's hoped that they'll be able to play. But it doesn't really matter, I suppose. They played with an unknown team against Kobe last week. They've had Hisashi Jogo in midfield. I think they played four strikers. It sounds great on paper. There was no midfield there, but they still ran out victors away at Vissel Kobe. So yeah, they'll play up for the fight, whatever team they put out. But hopefully, for the sake of balance and fairness, that they're able to put out a reasonable team. But if not, they might be looking at another postponement, because yeah, they had a lot more cases even after missing so many players in midweek. So it's quite touch and go.
Indeed. All right then. So yeah, as you said, currently the game is scheduled to go ahead. So we'll hope that that is the case. So the other two ties are, well, very, very evenly balanced after they finished a 1-1 in the first leg of Cerezo Osaka versus Kawasaki at the Yodoko Stadium. So the return leg at Todoroki on Wednesday night, the defending J1 champions have the away goal advantage. And similarly, Urawa Reds are the same after, yes, a part one of their trilogy against Nagoya. Of course, a part two did not go Reds' way over the weekend, but yeah, they'll try and book their spot in the Levain Cup semi-finals when they host Grampus at Saitama Stadium on Wednesday night. So yeah, all to play for in the League Cup in Japan. And yeah, still so much to play for, of course, in J1. And that's where we'll wrap up the episode now by looking ahead to match day 25. There are five games on Saturday and four on Sunday. We've mentioned some of them already. Of course, the first two that begin the match day are huge in the relegation dogfight when Kobe travel to Sapporo, and then Iwata host Reds at Ikopa. Elsewhere, Sam, I'm not sure about picking out any blockbusters, but I think there's one that you might be picking for Sam's pick of the weekend, perhaps one kicking off at 6:30 on Sunday evening.
Yeah, I definitely had my eye on that race, Seoul versus Hiroshima. Obviously, both teams, Hiroshima back to winning ways at the weekend. Kashima in a very good run of form. It's a crucial game in terms of ACL qualification. Maybe there are eyes on the title race as well. So, yeah, another one that's very difficult to call, but should be nice and open. Two managers vying for like that probably manager of the year position. Yeah, it should be a really interesting game. But just looking at the entire schedule, we're at that stage of the season where every game has some sort of intrigue to it. I think that Gamba versus Shimizu game is really interesting, just to see. Gamba obviously have had a bit more time to prepare for it. Are they prepared? I don't know. But it's going to be interesting because, as you say, they could, at that time when they kick off, they could find themselves bottom. So, yeah, really interesting. And then it's hard to look away from Yokohama versus Shonan for that Kanagawa derby on Saturday. Yeah, obviously Shonan need to bounce back from a horrendous result against Sapporo. It's sort of a free hit away at Yokohama. Nobody is expecting them to win. And as you said earlier, they've won free hits before against a top team. So yeah, that should be really interesting. But yeah, what, anything else that you would like to pick out?
Well, yeah, I mean, if Tokyo had have taken care of business at home against Shimizu this past weekend, you could have made an argument for Tokyo versus Cerezo being worth checking out. But I think now all that's left for Tokyo to do is try and play spoilers against Cerezo and try and halt their momentum. Of course, they're, as we said earlier, they're on an excellent unbeaten run and, yes, have won their last three games. But, yeah, for me, it's got to be Kashiwa, Hiroshima, and yeah, at the wrong end of the table, Gamba and Shimizu as the two on Sunday evening that are the picks of the weekend for me. And I guess what can we say, Sam? We're officially into the stretch run now. There's 10 games left in the season. Has it begun?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Last 10 games, we're over two-thirds of the way through the season. Every result matters at the moment. You can see how pivotal, we've used that word again, but how pivotal every game seems to be. So, yeah, we're absolutely in the home stretch.
Brilliant stuff then. All right, so enjoy the second legs of the Levain Cup on Wednesday night, Sam, and indeed this full round of J1, which, fingers crossed, we hope it does get played in its entirety over the weekend. And, yeah, it should be a huge one, and obviously another huge episode of the podcast coming up next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy the rest of your summer. I know you've got family around and you're enjoying a little bit more time off than usual. So hopefully you continue to enjoy that. And hopefully FC Tokyo put in a bit of a better performance for you next weekend.
Well, we can but hope. But yes, thanks for your kind words, mate. And yeah, got my mum over from Australia at the moment. So yeah, enjoying time with her. And she's loving hanging out with her grandkids in person for the first time in 3 years. So yeah, we're trying to make the most of the time while she's here. So, all right, that's it then for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved for as little as $1, 100 yen, a euro, whatever you like, a month, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And to you listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 25. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.